sweat the technique. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Hey, two of the books, one to go, final hour of the show. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. Brian McDonald with me as always today, but a special day because from Brian's perspective, he gets the impossible task of getting to talk for a change with Jeremy out. So it's just BMAC and me because Jeremy is doing some U of H basketball. We had asked you earlier, wrong answers only. What's Jeremy doing and his time in South Florida before he calls the Cougs tonight? And I hope that game's on TV. I haven't looked at it yet, but I would be looking forward to seeing that one. But we had some doozies earlier that I don't think some of them should be bear repeating, but we had them. But someone said he's in Orlando at Hogan's Surf Shop challenging Hulk Hogan to a bench press contest.
Well, we know Jeremy thinks he could beat up. Is it Jake Paul or Logan Paul that he thinks he could beat up?
Well, he wants the money involved, too. I mean, I understand the finances, but I don't know that the brain capabilities would be there based on the beating he would take.
So I could see, especially at Hogan's age, who I assume is in his 60s. I don't know for sure exactly.
I'm going to kick the radio guy's ass, brother.
Exactly. Well, hopefully Jeremy will say his vitamins and eat his prayers before he tries to challenge Hogan. But I wonder if Jeremy thinks he could take Hogan in his 60s or 70s.
I would hope not.
I'd be interested to see him find out.
I'm pretty sure his pharmacist is still pretty good. I'm not that I'm saying anything else, BMAC. I'm just...
Apparently, Jeremy is visiting his dad at Mar-a-Lago, making America great again, according to 8437. Mm. So, that's interesting.
Interesting is one way of putting that. Yep, there you go. Okay, so we were talking about Astros and Yordan and the CBS top 10 rankings earlier. Now let's get to some brass tacks because of the fact that the Astros got rained out today playing the Mets, but they did get some work in as Fromber was throwing to live hitters. He threw three innings. Hunter Brown was throwing to live hitters, albeit inner squad as well, for three innings. And J.P. France, oui, monsieur, threw one inning as he continues to try and work his way back after dealing with some shoulder issues. The question as we led to break was, how concerned are you about this pitching staff, this starting pitching in particular, and what they're going to need to do until JV returns? BMAC, I'll throw it to you.
Yeah, so what's kind of spawned where I wanted to go with this is I saw a quote from McTaggart today on Twitter saying, this was from Dana Brown. Astros GM Dana Brown said he's not in the market for a starting pitcher, well, obviously while Verlander's out. He envisions a rotation of Valdez, Javier, Urquidy, Hunter Brown, and J.P. France to start the season. Additional depth for Mernell Blanco and Spencer Arrighetti. And, look, I mean, Valdez, Javier, certainly I have a lot of, well, depending on what day you ask me, sometimes I'm a little less confident in Fromber. But there are certainly reasons to be fairly confident in Fromber and Javier. But to hear Dana Brown saying he has no plans whatsoever to even consider acquiring a starting pitcher, and I know you're acquiring him to be your seventh, eighth guy, so that's a difficult market to find a deal for. But going into the season, you know, depending on how long Verlander's out, with three-fifths of your rotation being Urquidy, Hunter Brown, who was – both of those guys were very up and down last year, and then J.P. France, who is now thrown – one more inning than you and I this spring training, it feels a bit dicey to me, and I'm a little bit worried that a JV is a little bit slow. We saw even when he came back last year for the Mets, he returned like first week of May. He still really wasn't right until July. It feels a little bit dicey going into the season with Urquidy, Hunter Brown, and J.P. France as your 3-4-5.
Now here's where it gets even dicier for me, because now they're starting to build up the hype train that Blanco is pitching his tail off in spring training.
He has had a good spring numbers-wise.
So, therefore, that they're going to put more eggs in that basket and say, well, we can just lean on him. Look, I've seen him pitch in Sugarland a lot, including last year, as well as with the Astros. I know that he's got some stuff that I think could actually be good big league stuff, but I almost have always said, after seeing some of his starts, if he's going to be a full-time major league player, I think he's going to be a one-inning guy coming out of the bullpen, because he can overpower some guys and his stuff can translate like for 3-4 batters. I just don't know if I believe in him as a starting pitcher. This is maybe also where Dana Brown would love to see Arrighetti be his guy, because he was pumping him up before the season started. But this is the Astros chasing a World Series title. This is where you've got to have Verlander, in my opinion, as we get into May, right? I'm fine with it if he misses a start or two. But after that, this is why it's so hyper important, because you don't know when you're going to get Garcia back. You don't know when you're getting Lance back. I don't know how much I can trust JP France. But I know if I have Verlander, Javier, and Fromber at the top of my rotation, and I assume Hunter Brown's going to be, even if he's somewhere in between where he was first half, second half, then I'm going to be fine. But it gets dicey when you get to the bottom half of that rotation, because of the fact that no matter how many guys you thought you were going to have at some point during the year, you can't be without like Verlander for a couple months.
Yeah, and that's the, I think, the reality that we have to maybe start to consider, is that even though they're talking about, you know, Verlander returning in a couple weeks into the season, maybe 2 weeks midway through April, again, like, look at his, you know, his game-by-game log last season with the Mets when he started off kind of in a similar situation. He wasn't right until July. So now you're going through not just 2 weeks, you're going through April, May, in June, and maybe by that time Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia are back, but every single one of these guys, even the two guys at the top in Fromber and Javier, have some sort of question mark with them. I do have confidence that most of those question marks will be answered favorably, but we have to consider the other side of that. If the other, if it's the other side of that and it gets answered negatively, and you don't have Verlander ready to go into the summer, or at least not at his normal standard, I mean, if it, the division race is tight, the Astros could have a problem.
See, that's where I disagreed with Jeremy, where he thinks the Astros are going to run away with this division. But this is how it gets a lot tighter, is because of the fact Seattle's got a lot of good young pitching, and they've got a couple of prospects.
They got a better staff than the Astros.
Well, they got
at least starting pitchers.
They got a couple of young prospects that are on the cusp of coming up as well, to go with the young pitchers they already have, Kirby and the other guys that they already have, to where they've got good pitching. And they're doing their damnedest every year to try and add bats to the lineup and do things to try and make their offense better. We know that the Rangers have offense, but they're without DeGrom and they're without Scherzer. They don't have Montgomery, and no one does at this point. So the starting pitching has taken a huge hit, and we know their bullpen hasn't been great. So that's where the Rangers' shortcomings lie. But overall, when I look at this, it's the double whammy effect of the fact that you thought you were going to go eight deep with starting pitchers and take your pick and be able to push a couple of good pitchers to the pen and have one of the best rotations in baseball. Now that you don't, you also hear Dana Brown say, I haven't been looking at the market and I haven't been considering starting pitchers. That's problematic to me as well, because of the fact that this is kind of goes back to when Nick Caserio knew that it wasn't an if, it was a when Kenyon Green was going to go down, that he didn't already bring a couple guys in as insurance policies. If I'm looking and hearing and seeing what I'm looking, hearing and seeing with the Astros starting pitchers, and the fact that JV, you're hoping everything that you're hearing is true and he's not going to be got out that long, but you already don't know when JP France is coming back, and you got Garcia and McCullers on the mend, that's half your staff. Why are you not at least looking around, kicking tires, whether it be free agency or trades or otherwise, to see if there isn't another guy out there that could help you?
Yeah, my hope is that Dana Brown is lying to us. Like, to me, that's the best case scenario, and that he's lying to us because he doesn't want to give away, I guess, any perceived leverage at a trade. Like, if other teams knew that he was desperate, like if teams knew that he was also worried, like we are, about the starting rotation, then maybe they try to take advantage of him in a trade. So that's my hope.
My hope is
that he's lying to us, but there's no reason to believe that.
The reason why I don't think he's lying to us, because he talks too much, and he's been talking up Arrighetti.
Yeah.
And now they're talking about Blanco.
I'm just hopeful that he
is. I think he thinks one of those two guys is the answer, no matter how long one or two of those guys are out, being France and JV, because we already know Garcia and McCullers aren't going to be around till after the All-Star break, probably. So I'm a little bit fearful that Dana Brown has already earmarked Spencer Arrighetti and Ronel Blanco, going one, if not both of those guys, are going to do everything we need them to do, and we don't have to worry, and that worries me.
Yeah, because there's a lot of ifs in that. Like, there's certainly, you know, there's an if that Arcidi gets back to being the sub-4 pitcher that we've seen him be in the past. There's an if that Hunter Brown shows the, you know, prospect pedigree that we saw him dominate Triple-A in Sugarland a couple of years ago. There's the if that J.P. France is the first eight-star J.P. France. There's an if that Spencer Arrighetti, the Astros' hot pitching prospect, delivers on his promise. I just don't like resting the success of a World Series contender on if. And that's kind of my problem with Dana Brown. If he's telling us the truth, not being more aggressive.
Yeah, that's the thing that worries me the most. I mean, look, I don't mind that Dana Brown has diarrhea of the mouth, but at some point,
certainly not team content.
Yeah, regardless of what you are or not telling us, you should be behind the scenes, and we should be hearing from a Heyman or others, hey, I'm kicking the tires to see what's out there. Hey, I'm one of those teams that's trying to see what Jordan Montgomery is trying to do, and if there's a way for a year or two to bridge the gap, similar to what we've seen like a Boris client like Chapman do a three-year deal, a shorter deal, get him to free agency again, but with a really good team behind him, having the opportunity to kind of set the market again for his client, or for a client like that, because he represents Snell as well, get at least a conversation going so we're not hearing, hey, Phillies and Yankees are looking at Snell. Hey, Yankees and Red Sox are looking at Montgomery. There's teams looking at these guys, and the Astros are standing pat.
Yeah, it's frustrating. I guess my holdout hope, other than hoping that Dana Brown is lying to us, is that until, I would say, what, maybe 2 days before, there wasn't really any notion that the Astros were going to go out and make some splashing move for Josh Hader. I don't think that was on many people's radars until a couple days before. So I'm hopeful that maybe, you know, Dana Brown's playing it cool and is keeping his eyes open. But certainly I do have some concerns.
No doubt about it. All right. Is Gary want to talk Astros? Do we know?
It doesn't say on my screen, but I assume he's you want to go.
Let's
to
get
him
to
here?
Gary before All we right. go to break. Gary, what's up, man?
Hey, what's up, Joe? How's it going? I just want to say, I guess I'm a GM criticizer, but I'm not sold on Dana Brown yet. I'm not sold on Brown, right? I mean, obviously, you know, there's still a lot to be determined, but my take is going into this season, we didn't have a single starting pitcher without a question mark, whether it just be old, coming off of underperformance or coming off of injury, right? And I think that applies to just about everybody you guys have discussed today. And so, although, of course, I like Hader. Like, who wouldn't want Hader? But, like, we have a pretty strong bullpen, and we have question marks all throughout our freaking, like, starting rotation. So wouldn't that $20 million look real good going towards Snell, although I know he'll get more than 20, but with Verlander going down, like, who are we counting on? Are we counting on Farmer to bounce back? We counting on Javier? Like, at the end of the day, maybe it's 50-50, but all of these question marks are not going to work out in our favor. I just wish we would have put more attention on the starting rotation, even if it wasn't a top flight guy.
But Gary, here's the thing. Real quick rebuttal, because I'm interested your feelings on this, but I know how you stand on general managers normally. But he got a deal done with a guy that I don't think – did you expect the Hader deal to get done? Because I didn't. And so he got a deal done at the top of the market with the best closer in baseball, to where he also had to work with Jim Crane on it. I get it, and that's part of the challenge, to where I give him props. Because, you know, James Click had a real problem dealing with the owner. He got that kind of a deal done. That's why when they made that move, I can sympathize with you and say, if you're going to go over the luxury tax anyway, why not – see if you can spend a couple more dollars and find a pitcher because you need one.
Yeah, no, I'm not mad at the Hader move, right? But I'm just saying that we're talking allocation of resources. Like, either we're going to be the Padres or the Dodgers, or we're not, right? So if we're going to go get Hader and then we're going to spend another $30 million, that's fine. But that's not who we are. So, yes, Hader's good, but we have a bullpen that's like the freaking superpower, and we don't have one single dependable starting rotation player. Now, it'll probably work out that two or three of them are, but I'm a little scared that Verlander, our top guy, is old and hurt, and we have Javier who underperformed. We have Farmer who underperformed. We have J.P. Franz who's – like, I could go on. It's just a bunch of question marks, and I wish we had just one solid, stable guy in our rotation at the very least.
Appreciate the call, Gary. I always appreciate you chiming in. Look, I think the biggest thing to take away from that, too, is, you know, you don't need as much from a starting rotation as most teams in baseball because your bullpen is so capable, 7-8-9. And you've got an offensive lineup that's going to put together a lot of big games with a lot of runs and crooked numbers that a lot of teams are going to be struggling with. So hopefully that all weighs in their favor too, and maybe one of the reasons why early on he's going to see how this team performs.
Yeah, there might be an element to that. That, look, as much as we stress out about how tight the division race is, there might be an element to Dana Brown, like, let's just, you know, maybe see 2 weeks. Let's see if our offense is able to carry us. Let's see if the question marks we have about Urquidy and Hunter Brown and J.P. Franz and these guys, if they do get answered favorably, then maybe you've saved yourself some money. Then maybe you saved yourself a prospect that you didn't trade away because those answers got those questions got answered favorably, and you don't maybe didn't need to rush out to acquire someone to replace the spot in the rotation where Verlander vacated. But I hope there's more. I hope Dana Brown feels more urgency than he's showing, I guess is the way I would phrase it.
Okay, fair enough. All right, we're going to continue to roll on. Now, there's some free agency talk, to, obviously, every single day leading up to when we get into that, what do they call it, the tampering period
the
of the NFL?
The legal tampering period.
The legal tampering period on Monday.
Dumb name.
There's a name that I brought up casually in a conversation a few weeks ago that seems to be resurfacing as a possible fit for the Houston Texans at the running back position. We'll discuss that next. Don't go anywhere. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
Found the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back, final hour of the program rolls on. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. Jeremy in South Florida to call basketball tonight, back tomorrow, remotely, I believe, BMAC, if that's right.
That is correct, yes.
And in the meantime, we asked you throughout the show, wrong answers only, what is Jeremy doing in South Florida before he does U of H Cougars basketball? To which 8787 said he's in Florida for the National Air Hockey Semifinals. Phenomenal response right there.
Clearly someone who listened to the show or Monday or whenever it
yesterday,
was.
Yesterday, I believe.
And heard Jeremy's terrible take about air hockey.
Being the best arcade game?
He called it the best arcade game.
Which is just stupid.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Someone said he's going to the Birdcage for a private show. I'm not reading that.
I have a guess as to what that means, but I'm not going to try to
I don't
want to
elaborate. Yeah. He's wrestling gators.
Now, that I would pay to see.
Okay.
We could do that here. There's places like we did on the bullpen, a remote down in it was down towards Lake Jackson, and there's like a gator resort.
Oh, I've seen it.
Yeah, there's a gator resort down there where you could go. I don't know if they would let civilians come in and wrestle gators, but I'd be willing to slip a 20.
You drive by and it's the whole thing. The whole thing, they get this big, massive, looks like a big gator, and then it's a gator farm.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen it.
Maybe we can each slip the guy a 20 and let Jeremy wrestle a gator.
And we could just sit in the crowd and just yell, "You're my boy, Blue." See how that works out.
While we're placing bets with my bookie about how he'll do.
There's another one I'm not going to read. And then on the topic that we just were touching on and talking about in terms of, are you worried about the starting rotation and the pitching staff? And there was a couple of good responses. Someone said Dana Brown's going to make every Astros fan mad and surprise everyone and sign Trevor Bauer. God, I hope
not. I can't see that.
I can't see it happening either.
Not with the current locker room. Like, I feel like this locker room has been pretty accepting of people, even when they weren't necessarily always pro Astro, but Trevor Bauer is about as anti-Astros.
He's so polarizing.
Yeah, it's just
controversial.
Beyond the legal stuff, he was just so anti-Astro, I couldn't see it happening.
Now, I don't want to say that I feel for the guy, but based on the evidence that he's put out there, he basically was set up. But it also led you to believe that there were tendencies that this dude isn't on the up and up, no matter what.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's hard. I get what you're saying.
He's had run-ins with underage girls on Twitter.
Right,
he's had run-ins with Alex Bregman. He's polarizing in the locker room. He's thrown a baseball when he got taken out of a game over the outfield wall. All the different things. If you thought that Osuna was an issue that caused veterans to have concerns, you best believe that with Verlander and McCullers still in the locker room, with guys like Altuve and upstanding guys in that locker room, they're not going to go quietly, especially if they don't hear about it first. But I think that would be their absolute last option, and I don't think there's any way that they're going to explore it.
Yeah, no, I don't think they'd want to go through the Osuna situation again. I couldn't see them disrupting the harmony of this Astros locker room by adding a guy like Bauer to the mix.
3667 said, Valdez and Javier sucked the second half of last year. They aren't that great right now. Okay, I'll give you half of that. They weren't great the second half of last season, but Javier started to figure things out late in the year. Fromber wasn't great, I get that, but I believe his stuff still translates, and we talked about that yesterday even. But the thing is, no one's great right now when they have an established spot in a rotation because everybody's working on something. Some guys are working to get in better shape. So that's not their problem. Some guys are working on other pitches. That has been an issue where guys are trying to get more pitches in their repertoire. So don't sit there and judge what starting pitchers that are established are doing from the ERA standpoint, runs given up, hits given up thing in spring training. We know what they can do. Joe Espada knows what they can do. He's not worried about producing in spring training for guys like that. He is worried about guys in the bullpen, excuse me, and the starters that he is currently evaluating to be in the rotation, getting guys out, but not those guys.
Yeah, obviously it was hard not to have a reaction to how poor Framber Valdez's first start this spring was, considering what he came off of and the inconsistencies, especially in the postseason. But again, yeah, he could be working on the pitch. He's obviously building up his stamina and his arm strength. So there's no reason. I wish we'd had a start today. Obviously, the rain got the game canceled, and Framber had to throw a simulated game instead, so we don't get that follow-up, because certainly if Framber had gone out, I mean, either way, either Framber comes out and he's great, then we all look silly for even considering the idea that that first spring training game mattered, or he goes out and gets shelled again, and then, you know, maybe we do start to just slowly, you know, lean and look towards the panic button, not fully press it, but just look his direction, make sure we know where it is in case we
Here's my
it.
Point on the starting pitchers, though, and why if you are a proven starting pitcher in this league, you shouldn't get all worked up about what a starting pitcher is doing in spring training. Carlos Rodon got absolutely lit up today for the Yankees. First pitch he gave up a home run. Last pitch he threw, he gave up a home run. He gave up bombs. He looked terrible. He's given up 6 home runs in his last 2 starts in spring training. No one cares. You know why? Because the games don't matter. The guys are working on pitches. They're getting in shape. Their arm isn't all the way ramped up yet. So therefore, take a deep breath. I understand because of the state of the starting pitching staff that you'll have concerns about every performance a guy has for the Astros, but just relax. We're not there yet.
So there's nothing that can happen in spring that would have you concerned?
Well, I mean,
or at least with the established guys. I know your bullpen's a different story, but with the established guys, there's no result that would have you maybe tilting your head a little bit with a little concern?
Well, as we talked about, if I would expect a guy like Blanco to be doing well right now. But if he was getting lit up and Eric Geddy is getting lit up, then I'm sitting there going, okay, whether I like what Dana Brown isn't doing right now or not, I know that there are guys that at least are showing that they are capable, if their name is called, to be a short-term starting pitcher for this team. They can do it. So, yeah, if those guys, and I need to see Hunter Brown because of the vet. Now, he's supposedly working on a slow curveball, too. So he's working on stuff, and he's going to be in the rotation no matter what. So on a lesser scale, Hunter Brown. But for the most part, I'm just watching the fringy guys that might be your fifth starter, depending on where J.P. France is, like Eric Geddy, like Blanco. If they're not doing well, now I would have a bit of concern. But I'm not going to be worried about a Framber and Javier.
Yeah, I 99% I agree with you. It's just – specifically with Framber, he was just, and look, there's reasons you could attribute, you know, I know Framber didn't pitch in the WBC, Javier did, but you had the WBC.
Both guys ramped up like they were going to.
Sure.
Because well, I mean, Framber Javier had actually, every expectation of pitching.
Right, yeah, but Javier actually, I mean, a few guys actually pitched in, Javier, Presley, or Keedy, and those are some of the guys we're talking about here. So there was reasons that you could attribute to why some of these guys were inconsistent, the WBC, the shorter postseasons because of being in the World Series, you know, back-to-back seasons. But just the way Framber fell apart over the second half of the season, especially because we attribute a lot of his shortcomings when he does have the inconsistencies to, you know, being between the ears, and that's more than just working on pitches. That's more than what you would normally attribute to struggles in spring training to be about. So because it's between the ears, and that's kind of where we have the concern, much less than his, you know, pitch repertoire or stuff or his physical age. If he does struggle and he's had those signs of weakness of getting rattled, I just have not a lot of concern, but, you know, again, just something to notice, something to put a pin in and kind of follow throughout spring training.
So the thing to me is if the velocity goes way down, if there's just a blatant lack of control and command of all pitches, then maybe I would have some concern. Because someone said, look, the way Rodon finished last season and the way that he's getting lit up now, the Yankees should be concerned. Well, maybe so, and maybe because it's carried over. I think from Framber and Javier's perspective, I think they were worn out. I think both fully expected to pitch in the WBC. One did, one didn't. But the fact is just to be ready to do it until you're convinced by your organization not to do it. In Fromber's case, you have to be throwing earlier. You have to be throwing more to get it to where you need to do it for your country. So now it's a long season. They go almost as far as they can go. both of them were desperately in need of some rest. I think they're going to come back. I think their velocity is going to be fine. Their command is going to be good. And that's why I don't worry about them.
Yeah, and certainly I think Javier has already started to answer some of those questions because we heard, you know, post his first game from Joe Espada and just all the reports that we see from the people at spring training there in Florida with the Astros that the velocity was a little bit back up, the fastball was livelier, his location was better, his mechanics felt better. So I'm less concerned now than I was before that first spring start from Javier. Problem is, you know, I want to lean to the side of no concern for Fromber, but the only thing we've seen from Fromber so far did nothing to erase any concern that you had going in. So it's not so much that I'm concerned by what he did in spring. It's just I was concerned coming off of last season, and he hasn't done anything to change the narrative yet.
3000 on text says, one game away from the World Series last year and got the best closer. Offense will be the issue, all caps, again. I just don't see this lineup again. The all caps again to me is the exact opposite of the way I feel. You got Maldi out of the lineup. No matter what you think or don't think of his leadership and his psychologist and everything he does defensively, the fact of the matter is that he was a massive hole in the lineup every time he came to the plate, and that's gone. And you've got better hitters at the bottom of your lineup, and you've got better hitters now toward the top of your lineup because you got Yiner replacing Maldi, and you've got Chaz for another year, and whether Jake does or doesn't, you have options. That's why I don't think the offense, I'm not worried about the offense right now, and they're tinkering too in spring training.
I mean, other than the possibility of Minute Maid being on a cursed burial ground, I don't have any reason to believe the offense is going to struggle. I mean, that the thing with the batter's eye and the home road splits was just so fluky. I mean, I guess it's possible it could happen again, but yeah, I mean, when you look at the lineup on paper, there's no reason to believe this offense would take a step back. I guess it's always possible. Injuries could happen. Again, cursed burial ground could happen. Maybe that's the reason why the batter's eye got to them in the second half of the year. But there's just no reason to see that. If you look at the back of the baseball card, like Jeff Bagwell said, if you look at the team, you know, their stat page on Baseball Reference and on paper, there's no reason to think this offense is going to be worse than last year. Right. The offense was already good last year.
All right, we're late for a break. We're going to get to a break. We're going to come back. We're going to get to the fact that there was a running back out there that's now possibly projected to your Houston Texans and see just exactly how you feel about that. We've got 30 minutes or a little less to go on the show, so don't go anywhere. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You're listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Hey, back for the final couple of segments of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM. You're tuning in to hear the sultry sounds and pipes of Jeremy Branham. He is off today to do U of H basketball in South Florida.
Is he?
So people have been requested upon by us to give us their wrong answers only. What is Jeremy doing today? And there have been some interesting responses throughout the day. Someone said he's getting his retirement villa set up in Florida.
Interesting. 1970 says Jeremy's having a manicure pedicure appointment with Pauly G.
And says he couldn't miss the appointment. 1970 loves us, so we love to hear from them. That was always good. Aggie Matt, my favorite, because, I mean, other than basketball, I don't know anything. He said he heard Jeremy was partaking in the Florida Man games today. He said it's a real thing. Google it.
It is a real thing. I couldn't see Jeremy in a Florida Man competition.
He's Google it?
I don't need to Google it. I know it's real.
Oh, have you partaken?
I haven't partaken. But I've seen it on the internet before. Jeremy would have to get, you know, some tats or maybe a fake grill or something to really be a full-fledged Florida Man. I don't know if he would he might be a little too straight-laced for that competition.
Yeah, based on the fact that most bad stories about dumb things humans do come out of Florida.
Or West Virginia.
Yeah, well, there's several other options, like on the second and third tier.
Yeah,
Florida normally almost literally leads the nation.
Florida, and this is how take this on for size as a segue. Florida in this situation is the Saquon Barkley of dumb crime.
Well done, Brian. Well done. I don't know if I should read this one either. I don't know, but I don't think it's too bad. 3338 says, Branham's trying to recreate today a Florida man. Florida man nicknamed Baby Cakes caught naked in a chair outside an apartment complex.
Hmm.
Sounds like if you asked me truth or fiction, I would to your or truth or AI when you did that little thing for us, I would say truth.
You would say truth. I could see anyone calling Jeremy baby.
Not Jeremy doing it, but I could see that being a Florida man doing that.
Yes, yes. That part I'm in agreement with. Yeah,
he's in Florida getting a mommy makeover?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
And Jeremy's trying out for the Astros. Well, you know, he did get two hits in his high school career.
There was once a video of him striking out a former host here with a wiffle ball.
Oh, I remember that.
So maybe he's going to be the fifth inning guy for the Astros.
I was there, and it was an extremely hot day outside when they did that. Yeah, that wasn't fun. All right, let's get to this before we miss out on an opportunity to do this. I had mentioned a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about potential fits for Derrick Henry, and the Cowboys were leaders in the clubhouse by a lot of people saying that that could happen. And I said, hey, you know what? If that happens, if I'm the Texans, I think Tony Pollard would be a really, really good fit for this Texans team.
Right.
And I think he's the kind of running back they could use. Now we're seeing that CBS Sports is predicting that Tony Pollard could sign with the Texans. Would you sign him? The projected AAV, 2 years, 13.1 mil, a little over six plus a year.
And a half, yeah.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've talked before about wanting to get kind of two for one as far as the price for running backs compared to the top of the market. And that it probably wouldn't be quite two for one if you sign him for six and a half.
I think you'd get Motor for five.
Sure, but I'm just saying, like, compared to whoever's at the top, it might be a little bit more or than half. But
you know, I think Saquon's going to get 11 or 12.
Right, so it's at least in the ballpark. It's at least in the ballpark. So either way, I think your point holds. But yeah, if you could get, you know, Pollard for this projection 6.5, and then add Singletary on for 5 or 6 as well. I'm guessing Singletary is going to get about 5. That's what he got last year.
Yep, yep.
Then I would certainly be happy with running back room of Singletary and Pollard, you know, making $11 million next year.
You know, and that would fit to my cash it or trash it of whatever Mike Evans signs for, the Texans will end up signing a corner and two running backs for the same price. I think that works.
And he would certainly be in the ballpark still. And the other thing about, I mean, obviously Pollard's efficiency went down last year, but he was coming off. We heard Michael Parsons weeks ago talk about, you know, that injury that he had was maybe a little bit more severe than we all knew. So once he got, you know, around halfway into the season, we saw his efficiency numbers start to tick up. He scored a little bit more. So I think Pollard's got plenty in the tank, obviously. He's a young guy. And I also think he's the type of guy that if you are going to sign him for decent money, even though 6.5 is a little bit of a savings, he's at least a guy that can contribute in the passing game as well.
See,
he's not like a Derrick Henry who was basically screen game only in the passing
game. To your point, though, what most people say is even if you come back literally from an ACL, that you're really not your old self again for over a season.
Yeah, for sure. So, we saw that with Saquon.
So if that's the case and you're getting prime Tony Pollard back at a discounted price, like we talked about, you can get another running back like Singletary as well. Your running back room is already better no matter who 3 and 4 are. No matter if Pierce is still here and you get somebody else like Ogunbowale, or even if you bring Ogunbowale back, your running back room is better, you're deeper, you're more talented, and that's a good setup to have behind C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think it keeps your options way open as you get into the draft, because you could attack it a number of different ways. You could add Pollard and then, like you said, add Singletary for a little bit less than you're paying Pollard. We've talked about Antonio Gibson in the past, a former receiver in college, really good in the receiving game. He's not going to get anything more than what, you know, Devin Singletary would get. So you could go that route. You could draft somebody maybe in the fourth round and then add that to Pollard and use the savings to address something else in free agency.
See.
So I think Pollard, not only like Jeremy wants, obviously he said, I think that's 100 times per show, but he doesn't want any significant holes going into the draft. And if you sign Pollard, you don't have a hole at running back.
Yeah, you don't. The other thing is I heard Lance going off this morning about Derrick Henry is a better fit than Saquon Barkley, and Derrick Henry would be a great fit for the Texans and their scheme, and saying that he'd pay him an average of 10 a year for 2 years. I'm out on that.
Well, let's explore that briefly before we get to break, because there's another article from CBS where they projected Derrick Henry. Now, they projected him going to the Ravens, but the Texans were on their list of possible destinations, and they're estimating Derrick Henry slightly less than the 10 you mentioned at 2 years, $18 million.
Even at 9 a year as opposed to 10 a year, I don't think he's got much left in the tank. He doesn't help you in the receiving game. I don't know that schematically he's the fit Lance thinks he is. I think that he definitely has to get going downhill, and we've seen the Texans stifle him late in the year when, regardless of, you know, if you want to say, well, did he have all his blockers? Did he have this? Did he have that? I just think that that's a riskier proposition. Pollard coming off an injury, I believe he's got plenty left in the tank. Younger guy, I believe in him. That's a guy that's taken a beating a lot in Derrick Henry, too. I don't think I would feel comfortable at 9 or 10 a year giving Derrick Henry a two-year deal and expecting him to be anywhere near the Derrick Henry that he was in Tennessee.
Yeah, I could get with the argument of possibly Henry being a scheme fit. I do think he is not necessarily more so than Pollard, but more so than Saquon. He's more of a one-cut runner. But the problem is what you mentioned. Like, I can't pay more to get older running back. Like, if this was, if you're saying Derrick Henry 1 year $9 million, I'd entertain that. I'd at least, you know, coin flip that in my mind and make it an either or decision. I would definitely consider Henry at 1 year's $9 million. But when you add in the second year, I'm out at that point. Not only because Pollard's younger, he's obviously he hasn't taken as much abuse in the league, but there's no reason to me to pay more for an older.
Someone
back.
Said instead of being Patriots South, we'll just be Cowboys South because of Pollard. Who?
What, one guy?
Yeah, who else?
I mean, when Noah Brown was here last
year, Brown did a good job here.
It was a one-year deal. Who else would there actually be other than Noah Brown and potentially Tony Pollard?
I'm racking my brain. I can't think of anybody else.
Yeah. Oh, quickly, we haven't reacted to one thing. We got to get to one thing before we get into our car wreck of the day. Yeah. I assume you saw the news, by Kymie Fairbairn has resigned. So Kymie Fairbairn, 3 years, $15.9 million, average of 5.3 per year, which puts him fourth in the league for average annual value for kickers behind Justin Tucker, Matt Gay, and Graham Gano. Your thoughts on Kymie Fairbairn?
I'm fine with it. Fourth highest paid kicker has some concern for me. I just expect that there's going to be a point in time where Caserio is going to find some better, cheaper deals for other positions than this. But we saw, and it was obviously a huge feather in his negotiating cap with Fairbairn in the fact that, one, he couldn't be franchise tagged, and two, that when he was out, Amendola was horrible and threw up a huge red flag that he's a good fit here. He's been good here. Is he fourth best kicker in the league? Good here. I don't know, but I'm fine with the deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you could definitely argue. I think you can make an argument that Kymie Fairbairn is top four kicker in the league. But even if you want to say he's, I don't know, six or seven, the price of $5 million per year is worth the peace of mind that he gives you. And so I'm absolutely fine with the deal.
And the guy texted back and said, by the way, Cowboy South because of Dalton Schultz too.
Okay, three guys
total if you get Tony Pollard. Was Schultz bad for you? No. Did that work out? Yes. So if you also would get a guy that could do what Tony Pollard could do, would I be mad at it? No. And who else was the third one?
Noah Brown.
And Noah Brown. Noah Brown had a good season for you. So, look, as opposed to all the swings and misses Patriots South has given us, if you at least go and get Cowboys players and they work out for you, maybe it's just a better deal, better culture, and a better place to be around, and they play better. How about that? How about that for a rebuttal?
Shots fired to Boston. But, yeah, I mean, who cares? If they play well, who cares? Like, I get, like, you know, Houston fans, and I'm amongst them that, you know, we don't like, you know, Cowboys players. We don't like Cowboys fans. We don't like really anything Dallas. They remember they killed one of our presidents. But who cares? If they're good players and you get them at a good value, what does it matter if they used to play in Dallas?
There you go. We take a quick break. Come back for the car wreck of the day. Coming up next in our final segment on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Back for the most popular segment of the Killer Bees, the car wreck of the day, except for Fridays. You have plenty on this list, my friend, as we wrap up your 3-hour marathon with me today, and I appreciate you, Brian McDonald. Also, a reminder that Glenn Davis has got Soccer Matters right after our show, and it's a big one. He's going to preview tonight's CONCACAF big matchup between Columbus and your Dynamo, and there is no finer, better, smarter man that's more dedicated to soccer on the planet than Glenn Davis, I know. And that story he told the other night about falling down backwards on his caboose, calling live play-by-play and not missing a beat. That's who Glenn is.
Yeah, Glenn Davis will never be the car wreck today.
He is a gamer.
He kept going.
He is a paisan, and he is a gamer. All right, what do you got for car wreck of the day, Brian?
I think we got to start where we started the show, and that was Alperen Şengün playing bully ball underneath the basket with Victor Wembanyama. Wembanyama, who didn't want to be here in Houston, got bullied all night by Alperen Şengün. That defense from the rookie, not great last night.
No, he looked like he was stuck in cement a lot, and kudos to Alpi for kind of picking up what his coach has been putting down and really putting on a clinic last night. I was thoroughly impressed, and I saw people, Kelly Eco reported, Victor Wembanyama, unlike all the coaches and the players that were exchanging pleasantries after the game, stormed off and went to the locker room. He damn well should. This is a guy that applauded when he knew he wasn't going to get drafted by the Rockets. He came in here and might want to make a statement that, you know, whether he wanted to be here or not, that he's a good player, and he got his ass kicked.
Yeah, they tried to spin it on Twitter like, oh, he just cares about winning so much. No, I think he was a little bit of – look, and I don't necessarily – I'm not going to get bent out of shape about someone being a poor sport occasionally as long as it's not a constant theme. But, yeah, I think that was him being a little bit of a poor sport last night for sure.
On that same note, I'm going to nominate Marilyn Dubinsky. I'm allowed to say her name because that's what she uses on X or
okay.
Twitter.
All right.
She tweeted out before the game, I need the Spurs to dominate this game. Otherwise, it won't be long before I'm watching the Rockets broadcast on mute. Then followed it up later after the first half by putting mute. There it is. Seriously, winning or losing, Craig Ackerman and Ryan Hollins are unbearable. And then to add insult to the final injury, Craig, my boy, responded after the game and said, tough night for you, Maryland. Thoughts and prayers. Well
yeah,
played, Craig.
I love the salty response there when it goes your way at the end. That was well done by Mr. Ackerman. I'd like to – I don't know if you caught this, but earlier in the show we had Gary call in.
Yes.
He was wanting to talk about the Astros.
Gary is a hater of most all general managers in Houston sports.
Well, he's winding up here on Car Wreck of the Day because when you welcome Gary into the show – he said, now we have Joel Blank, we have Brian McDonald. Jeremy's usually on the show, but he's not here today because he's a Florida man with UH Cougars. Gary said, how's it going, Joe? That was how he talked to it. I guess, yeah.
Is that for me or you?
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know who Joe is in this scenario.
Gary.
I can tell by your face that you didn't hear it when it happened. But, yeah, Gary, when you threw it to him, said, how's it going,
yeah,
Joe?
If I'd have heard that, as much as I like when Gary calls in, Gary would have caught one from me on that.
Yeah, like, come on, man.
Come on, Gary, you're a regular. What are we doing?
Yeah, that was Gary needs to take an owl on there.
Again, one more from the Rockets game last night. The fake fight that was Sohan and Amen Thompson. No NBA guy really wants to fight these days.
No,
maybe
no,
maybe other
not.
Than Draymond Green. Stop it already.
I think a man wins that fight though.
Sohan's blowing him kisses and look, I was surprised because a man is not that big of a dude that I could see in a
tough,
younger
though.
Kid that he might walk away from it. The fact that he went after him, I love that.
Shoved him hard.
Love that.
Yeah, one more for me. I showed you these photos right before the show started, but the Oakland Athletics have put out visuals of what their new stadium could look like in Las Vegas, even though we don't even know if they're actually going to be in Las Vegas, like 100%. And the damn thing looks like they copied the Sydney Opera House in Australia.
It really does.
It's the most over-the-top, bizarre-looking stadium I think I've ever seen.
It looks like the you're right, the arena or opera
Sydney
house,
opera
whatever,
house,
in Australia. And then on top of it, it's got a lot of Minute Maid feel to it, where the left field is
like the
big glass wall where you can see the skyline or the strip in this case. But overall, why do you need a retractable roof in Vegas? It's either hot as all get out or it's freezing in the desert. How many open air games are you going to have?
The only thing I kind of like, although it could be end up being really dumb, is it looks like it has like a video screen that almost goes the entire length of the roof.
I saw that.
Yeah, that could be really cool, or it could be really dumb. I'm not sure.
And it could be really distracting to a hitter if it gets to be too much of an abstraction.
That's also true. That's
just throwing that out there, architecture people. Maybe get some baseball people involved before you go and make final decisions on that bad boy. Who's winning?
I think I got to go Wimby's defense.
Yeah, I'll go Wemby's defense. Although I do.
Or Wemby in general.
I really like the way Craig put that Maryland in her place, too. But I'll go with Wemby's defense.
We could go Spurs in general. But I think specifically Wemby getting bullied by Şengün was a nice little car wreck that went in her favor.
That's fine. All right, Brian McDonald doing double hard work today, filling in for Jeremy and doing his normal duties. We appreciate him. We appreciate you. Glenn Davis and a big preview of Columbus and the Dynamo and the CONCACAF Coming up next, it's Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 FM.